Good morning, Tony.
How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm good, thank you. Enjoying this sunny weather.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very nice. It is too. The night sky. There are things that can be seen in the night sky. I know the vision is not as good, and we don't see quite everything that's there because of the amount of light that there is. But there are some interesting things in the sky at the moment, aren't there?
Yes, there are. And before we get on to those, Tony, of course, I mean, yes, it's summer, so we've got these lovely warm evenings. But of course, the Milky Way looks stunning at this time of year. So July, August, absolutely gorgeous. Because of course, we're looking towards the centre of the Milky Way now. So that's worth bearing in mind. And it's always lovely to go outside and look at the stars. But of course, the planets now are returning in style. So we've got a few things to look at as well with the planets.
Yeah, I gather Saturn is in the news at the moment, or going to be in the news fairly soon. Something to do with that and the moon, I'm sure you'll explain.
Yes, that's right, Tony. So on the 21st of August, we're going to have what we call a full lunar occultation. That's where the moon appears to cover the planet Saturn. So Saturn is going to disappear behind the moon. Now, the moon moves around in the sky in a narrow corridor that's about 10 degrees wide, and that's centered on the ecliptic. So the ecliptic is where most of the main planets all orbit around the sun. But the width of the moon means that planetary occultations, because it's such a narrow corridor, the occultations are quite infrequent. So we're lucky to be having one on the 21st, to happen at precisely 4:28 in the morning, when the moon's about 24 degrees up from the horizon, and the planet that it's going to is Saturn, which is always beautiful anyway. So it'll take about 49 seconds to disappear behind the limb of the moon, and then it's going to reappear at 5:13, so just over, well, almost an hour later, when the moon's dropped a little bit in the sky, so down to about 20 degrees, and it will take about 110 seconds to reappear from ringtip to ringtip. So that's quite a nice little segment to watch the rings subappear, then the main disk of the planet, and then the rest of the rings as well. So that would be really stunning. I mean, I remember quite a few years ago now being out in the paddock at home, looking at the moon just coincidentally and seeing this light very, very close to the left-hand limb. And I grabbed my binoculars, and of course it did look stunning. So this will be equally stunning. Now, of course, it's at the start of dawn, but the sky will still be fairly dark, so it'll be quite easy to see Saturn. You can definitely see it with the naked eye. It's better if you have binoculars, and of course, if you have a telescope, even better than that. Now, Saturn appears quite edge on at the moment, Tony, so its northern pole is tilted towards us by just 3 degrees. So the rings appear rather thin, but it will still be beautiful. And of course, there are the moons, the larger moons of Saturn as well, particularly Titan, the largest. We'll be able to see that as well.
Yeah, quite a sight, I would think. And of course, our own moon doing some spectacular things of late. I've looked out in the evenings and towards darkness and seen some fabulous shots of the moon. Very, very clear at the moment.
Yes, it's beautiful. The skies have been, the seeing, as we call it, has been very, very good. It's been very, very sharp, hasn't it? And the skies have been lovely anyway. Reminds me of lockdown, actually, Tony, when we had those clear skies during lockdown. Stunning.
Yeah, I think that was more to do with the aeroplanes not flying, but they're flying at the moment. And the clearness of the sky at the moment seems to be spectacular when it comes to sort of viewing the moon. It's not the only thing going on in the sky, though, is it? There's Mars and Jupiter sort of having fun with each other, aren't they?
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it, Tony. Mars, Jupiter, and actually Uranus is up there as well. They're, located near Taurus. So that's the part of the sky that's visible in the east in the early morning. And on the 14th of August, Mars is going to be 26 arc minutes away from Jupiter. So that's about a third of a degree away from Jupiter.
Right away, though,
looking very, very close to each other. Oh, my gosh, yes. But they're going to look fantastic in binoculars, and they aren't missable. I mean, I saw them about 3:30 in the morning, and both Mars and Jupiter are looking amazing. And then on the 15th of August, Tony, before sunrise, they're even closer. They're only 21.5 arc minutes away from each other. So that's very, very close. So definitely get your binoculars, get looking through the telescope. There'll be quite a few photo opportunities there, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is the wonder of the perspective of seeing things from different places. If you're standing on Earth, you said, was it 26 arc minutes? And from Earth, it looks mighty close. But I'm guessing if you were standing on Mars, it wouldn't seem quite so close, would it?
No, absolutely not. They're just dots. Yeah, like our sun would appear so much smaller, of course, as well. And we would be that small, pale blue dot, as Carl Sagan said, very, very small.
Yeah, it's quite something. They say this is the perspective of the whole thing. And having seen you talk about some of these things, this ability to sort of put huge, huge, huge proportioned distances into a perspective where you can actually see what's happening. And, you know, as you said, you described the Earth as a tiny blue dot, and you're standing sort of, I don't know, how many light years away? It's a long way.
Yeah, a long, long way.
Yeah. OK. The other thing, of course, that's going on, I mean, this is a perfect time of year for seeing this sort of thing, are meteor showers, aren't they?
That's right, Tony. Now, where do we start with meteor showers? A meteor shower is a large number of shooting stars in the sky. So as we've shared before, Earth is in orbit around the sun, of course, and not just Earth, but the other planets, and all sorts of other debris also circling around the sun, some close to the sun, some further out. And there's also debris from icy, rocky objects that are a long, long way away from our solar system, but they get captured by the sun's gravity and pulled to the sun. And as they approach the sun, the ice and the dust and whatever are on the surface of the rocks ablates or melts, and that creates the tail. And those are the comets pass through the solar system. Sometimes they get gobbled up by the sun. Mostly they go around the sun and then go back out into the distant reaches of the dark, cold space. So Earth is passing through all these sort of tails of various times of the year, and it's going to be passing through the tail of comet 109P Swift Tuttle.
Catchy
name.
That's
a comet
that
has
name.
An orbital period of 133 years. I know, they're never that catchy, are they? Hale-Bopp was pretty catchy.
It was, wasn't it?
So this has an orbital period of 133 years, so that means it takes 130 years to come to the sun. And it's classed as what we call a Halley-type comet because it has an orbital period between 20 and 200 years, passed around the sun. But the debris from that comet is still there, and Earth will pass through the debris of that comet during August. Now, it's from like the 8th right the way through to the 16th, I think it is, peak. So that means that we'll pass through a particularly sort of dead material left over from that comet on the night of the 12th of August. So the best nights is the 11th of August and the 12th of August, because that's when a particularly dense field of this material. So lots of this material will be hitting the atmosphere, and that will create a large, large number of shooting stars. And the Perseids is always a pretty good performer. You expect to see quite a few, so typically about 100 an hour, actually, on a really good night. Now, sometimes the moon can interfere because, you know, obviously the brightness of the moon means it bleaches out the sky. So you can only see the really brighter ones. But the moon's in its first quarter phase on the 12th, bright early phase, but the position of the phase tends to be quite poor. So that also works in our favour. On the night of the 12th, the moon sets around 10, so before the sky gets properly dark, it's not too bad. We should still be able to see quite a few of them.
Spectacular things if you do actually manage to see them. The trouble is, you can look up in the sky and you see one go across the sky. Oh, yeah, there's one. And you miss the next one because it goes off behind you. It's an interesting thing that they're over a fairly wide space, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So really, for viewing, your best thing is, particularly this warm time of year, get some loungers, get comfortable with coffee, lie back on the loungers and really view the whole sky. I mean, where they actually come from, where they emanate, is from the Perseids constellation. If you're not sure what that looks like, it's near Cassiopeia, the sort of the W shape. But if you're not sure, Google it. There's star maps on Google. There's all kinds of things, especially on your phone. It'll show you what the Perseids constellation, Perseus, looks like. So that's where they appear to come from. But really, they come all the way over the sky, Tony. So you just need to lay back and have a look. They blast out more fireballs than any other shower. So that's where you get a large clump of material that burns up. So you get a big bright flame, quite a long tail, and that will go on for quite a few seconds sometimes. You can see some really spectacular ones.
Yeah, it looks like it might be worth setting up camp in the garden to go and watch.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen some really stunning. They're called sort of persistent trains. That's what they're called. So it's like a line of superheated air and meteor sort of that appears to glow for a few seconds. And in some ways, even longer than that, well after the shooting star itself has flashed across the sky. So really spectacular.
These are actually quite different to the things we see as Aurora Borealis, which, of course, as everybody knows, is the Northern Lights. You've got these meteor showers, and then you've got that sort of thing. What would you call that? If it's not a meteor shower, is it?
What, the Northern Lights?
Mm, yes.
Yeah. No, that's where you have cosmic particles hitting the Earth's atmosphere. So they're actually from the solar wind. So this is the sun pumps out an enormous amount of plasma from its surface constantly into the solar system and beyond. And that hits Earth's atmosphere. It's sort of captured by the magnetosphere that surrounds and protects that. But sometimes, especially when there's a lot of activity, those cosmic particles are captured and funneled down to the north and south poles of the planet. And when that material, those cosmic particles, hit the atmosphere, they interact with atoms and molecules in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
They excite in the atoms and molecules. And then when they drop down again, they release that energy in the form of light. And depending on the colours of the light is dependent on which chemical it is. Oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen, they're all different colours.
Mm.
And that is what gives you those sort of magnificent show of light. So that's what the Northern Lights are. It's the cosmic particles hitting some molecules in our atmosphere, exciting the least light. Hope that explains that.
Yeah, it's quite different, obviously, to a meteor shower. But on all of this, because we mentioned at the very beginning that there's the lack of darkness at the moment, but there's some good things to see in the sky. But for most of us, when would be the best time of the year to look out of the night sky? What are the conditions that you would really need to see the absolute maximum?
Well, really, I suppose at the winter months there, Tony, because to see the number of the thousands of stars seen with the naked eye, the best time of year for that is the winter, because you have the dark skies. And of course, the dark skies start earlier. So you can always see a lot more when you have dark skies.
Mm.
But as I was saying earlier, during the summer, so July, August, Earth is facing towards the centre of our Milky Way galaxy. So there's a lot more you can see, like there's lots of more interesting dust clouds within the plane of the galaxy, and lots of really exciting nebula you can see, particularly when you're looking towards the centre in the direction of the Sagittarius constellation. And the summer constellations, if you can see them, are really stunning. As I say, Sagittarius, it looks like a teapot. And my favourite, the constellation of Scorpio, which sort of, you know, is out across the sky and has the shape, you know, the tail. Oh, it's magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. Antares, the heart of the scorpion, the red supergiant star in the centre there that's unmissable. There's lots of things to enjoy in the summer as well.
Yeah, well, we're getting to, well, I don't know if you call this midsummer. I suppose it would be actually midsummer, but it's the towards the end of the seventh month of the year, and it gets darker as we head towards the end of the year, and lots more to see. But for now, thank you for talking to us. We'll catch up with you in a month's time. For now, Jane Green, thank you for talking to us.
Oh, thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure, as always.